Hey everybody, welcome to a fun and great and informative episode of Back to School with Maz Jobrani. Today we have two professors, Professor Bleich and Professor Van der Veen. They have written a book called Covering Muslims, American Newspapers in Comparative Perspective. They are here today to talk to us, first of all, about how newspapers in the West depict Muslims in a negative way. Secondly, they're going to tell us why it's not just right-wing newspapers, but also left-wing and central newspapers. They're all depicting Muslims in a negative way. And lastly, they're going to tell us if you don't want to think negatively about Muslims, the best thing you can do is stop reading. Don't read anymore. That and more right now on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Maz Jobrani. Hey. Jobrani Maz. Oh, Maz Jobrani.
Hey, Jobrani.
Mazzy, Mazzy. Oh, Maz.
Hey.
I got a podcast. Oh,
Back to School. Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Back to School with Maz Jobrani. I am Maz Jobrani. This is my sidekick, Tehran. How are you, T?
I'm wonderful.
Well, Tehran and I, for the longest time, I think I speak for both of us when I say when we do stand-up comedy, one of the things we hope we're achieving is presenting people from our parts of the world in a positive way. Now, for me, that's being Iranian-American. That's also being Muslim-ish. I'm not really religious, but Muslim-ish. And Tehran, for you, both black as well as Iranian. And I think that we try to say, hey, look, we're funny and we want to be funny and we want people to laugh with us. And we have people like us. It's not all mullahs and,
but that's the thing, Maz, being Muslim-ish is part of it, right? You're Muslim-ish and most people are, and no one looks at people differently when they're Christian-ish. No one looks at them differently when rappers go on stage and they're like, I want to thank my hit song, Big Booty Ho. I want to thank Jesus and I want to thank my mom. No one looks at them like, oh, they're not Christian, right? No one ever thinks, they just get accepted. So that idea that Islam and Muslims are a monolith, you know, especially from someone like me who comes from such a different religious and ethnic background, looking at anyone as a monolith, there's a huge problem with that. You know,
you're,
and that's why
you're
great at it. You are Muslim-ish is most Muslims, just like Christian-ish is most Christians. That's
you're
the truth.
It's funny because I think, again, and this goes back to, this book that these guys wrote looks from 1996 to 2016. And obviously anybody with half a brain cell would tell you, yes, Muslims usually get depicted negatively in the media, right?
Or they should.
They should know that. And even before that, like from years before, that's been happening. But interestingly enough, it's not only the idea that, oh, you're all terrorists, but rather there's sometimes very nuanced understandings. For example, I was doing a show one time at the Comedy Store in LA, and Bobby Lee, my friend Bobby Lee, whom I love, he's Korean-American, very funny guy. He was on the show and he was kind of pacing around nervous before going on stage because in the audience, it was a big Persian audience and there was like some Arabs and he was a little nervous. And I go, what's going on? He goes, well, can I be dirty? Can I cuss? And I go, yeah. And he goes, they're not going to be, offended, because he had in his mind that these guys are all Muslims and they're all devout and they'll be upset when he says penis or whatever. And I go, Bobby, no. I go, the people here tonight, these are all secular Middle Easterners. And most of them are probably getting drunk on tequila right now. Like the raunchier you get, the more they're going to like you. And it took him by surprise. He's like, what are you talking about? Because he had learned about Muslims from the media. And again, he wasn't looking at them as terrorists, but he was afraid to even perform in front of them.
Yeah, but just thinking they're conservative, just thinking that they're a conservative or there's this conservative air as if Muslims just aren't people, which of course Bobby Lee is great at thinking everyone is the same. And that's what is so important about what you do, is just showing people are people. You're an Iranian person with a Muslim background and you have the same problems with your kids and your wife that everyone does, no matter what their culture, ethnicity, race, or background. Everyone has these problems. Not even, it doesn't even matter their sexual orientation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Does not matter.
And I'll tell you the one thing, you know, before we get into talking with the guys, I love that they wrote the book and they give some solutions about like how to move forward. One thing I always suggest to people, and you have done this, I suggest people, once it's possible, for them to travel to these countries. Because when you go to Egypt and Jordan and the UAE and Lebanon or wherever, you realize exactly what you said. Like when you open up a newspaper in Jordan, it's not talking about terrorism and you know, fundamentalism and all this stuff. It's talking about the economy and what's going on. And there was a fire here and there was a, you know, a karate champion there. People are living their lives. And so the best thing I think everybody can do is to travel to these parts of the world. So that's my advice to everybody. Travel when we can travel again.
Are you paying? Are you paying?
I'm paying. You guys get going.
But I do think that I think that one of the things is there should be some type of study abroad for every public school, high school student, where the government pays, and it would solve the problems. Because think of how much money we spend on locking people up for hate crimes. I guarantee you, if we sent people across the world, we would save money in the long run. Just every high school student goes somewhere for 2 weeks. 2 weeks, and you will realize that people are just people.
You're sounding like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. You're sounding like a socialist communist. I totally agree with you. They should travel. People should travel. We should have programs that encourage people to travel. But since we can't travel right now, let's talk to Professor Bleich and Professor Vanderveen. Did I just mess up his name?
Vanderveen, you got it.
Yeah. Let's talk to Professor, excuse me. Just finishing my cold here. Let's talk to Professor Bleich and Professor Vanderveen. They are the authors of Covering Muslims, American Newspapers, and Comparative Perspective. Tehran, how do people find you?
At I Am Tehran, all across the board, and on tour with Maz.
I am at Maz Jobrani, all across the board. We will be in Seattle this coming Friday, and hopefully this this variant starts to die down, and we will be in San Francisco. We'll be in Washington, D.C., Portland, Canada, we're coming soon.
Canada.
Come, go to MazJobrani.com, find the schedule. We'll see you on tour. Let's get now to the two professors, talk to them right now about covering Muslims on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to School, yeah.
Professor Bleich, Professor Vanderveen, thank you for being on Back to School with Maz Jobrani. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Great.
Well, listen, guys, I told my son, Dara, that you guys had written a book on the depiction of Muslims in Western media, basically. And then he had a question. So we're going to start with his question and we'll go from there. So here's Dara's question to you.
Hi, Professor Eric. Hi, Professor Moritz. I have a question for you. What started the bad depiction of Muslims in the media?
What started the bad depiction? Now, I know that your book goes, I think, from 96 to 2006. Is that correct?
2016.
That's what I meant. So did you guys look at, historically speaking, when Muslims started to be depicted negatively in the West? Or did you just start at 96 and go, and why 96?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the answer to your son's question is, when weren't they depicted negatively? I think that's a better question. So we went back as far as we could in terms of accessing the newspaper data that we have. And they were bad. It was bad right from the beginning. So one of our hypotheses was, is it possible that 9/11 is the cause of the negativity? The answer is no. It was negative even before 9/11. And even the opening vignette of our book is set in the 1800s, a newspaper article from the New York Times that talks about another Muslim outrage in Syria. So the negative depictions, I don't know that they ever weren't there.
Well, I'm happy you say that, because as an Iranian American, when September 11th happened, a lot of people would say things like, oh, wow, you know, that really changed people's image of you guys. Or they would say to me, sometimes we would be doing morning radio to promote a show in some city. And there was actually people who said, oh, September 11th was good for your career. And it was offensive. First of all, I was like, you wouldn't go to a black person and be like, slavery was really good for your career, or, you know, Jewish person, Holocaust was good for your career. I was like, no, I was doing stand-up before September 11th. But more importantly, I pointed to them. I said, I came to America in the late 70s and from Iran. And quickly, like a year later, the hostage crisis happens. And then after that, there's the movie Not Without My Daughter. And then after that, there's Iran-Contra. I said, it's been ongoing, as you just said, Professor Bleich, that it's been ongoing. And did you guys look at the reason why the Muslims were chosen to be these demons? Professor Vandermeer, yeah, you want to answer that maybe?
That's another really good question. So what we did is we established that coverage is very negative and that this is nothing new. And so then we tried to kind of systematically set out and figure out what factors might account for the negativity. Like, what is it that is making this news negative? And there are some candidates, right? So sometimes people say, oh, it's negative because, let's say, there are all these radical imams, or it's negative because we think of Muslims as sort of the stereotypical other, or it's negative because Muslims are disproportionately involved with terrorism. And it turns out that there is negativity associated with each of those things, but they do not account for the overall negativity of coverage. So we were not able to find a sort of a single reason that would explain the negativity.
Well, let me ask you this, because Tehran, having an Iranian father, Tehran, maybe you could speak to this. Your father was probably not highly religious, right? I mean, he's just pretty secular, correct?
Sure.
And so in your guys' study of all of these articles, do they ever, you know, I could, if I wanted to just cover all of the extreme Christians and what they're doing, from the Crusades on, I could say, oh, there they go. But there's a lot of more secular ones, right? Like Tehran, what was your upbringing with your father? Did your father pray five times a day? What was the Islam in your family?
Definitely not. Definitely not. First of all, I feel like a lot of Iranians are Muslim light. And even though they're painted with this picture of being more conservative in every facet, that is not the truth for an overwhelmingly majority of Iranians, especially the diaspora, right? And so, no, my father didn't pray five times a day. He had grown up himself with a mixture of Islam and Zoroastrianism. And so it was more, he was culturally, I guess, it influenced. But the truth is, he was way more Iranian than he was Muslim. But you wouldn't see that if you looked at people depicted today. And it's very interesting how we cross-section Islam with what is actually just Arab culture. A lot of things that people think are stereotypically Islam are actually just things that are Arab.
And would you guys say that the coverage of the media adds to that? Because I know personally, if I tell sometimes, you know, I'll be in the middle of, I don't know, somewhere in North Carolina doing shows and oh, where are you from? Iran. And they go, oh yeah, like Saddam Hussein. And I'm like, no, that's the wrong country. The media does a pretty bad job, correct me if I'm wrong, of showing the nuances and humanizing us in some form, correct?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think on, you know, to a large extent, coverage of Muslims abroad, which is to say outside of the United States, tends to be drawn to stories of war, conflict, rebellion, terrorism. And then it all sort of blurs into one story about the Muslim world. So it's not that all newspaper articles write about the Muslim world as if it's one thing, but we certainly found a number of stories that generally opinion pieces that talk about the Muslim world. And of course, the Muslim world is a very funny concept because as you guys were just talking about, you know, there are people from predominantly Muslim countries who themselves are not, who don't practice very much, who are faithful but not practicing, who are faithful and practicing, who are neither of the above. So even within one Muslim country, to talk about the Muslim world seems to me to be an oversimplification. And I think that's something that the American media tends to do, is just sort of talk about lots of different countries where there are problems and attach the word Muslim or Islam, even when that's not really the most important facet of the story.
You know, I like what you guys have done because I was a big fan of Jack Shaheen. You guys know Jack Shaheen, of course, correct? He wrote the book Real Bad Arabs, R-E-E-L, Bad Arabs. And he looked at the film depiction of Arabs from back in the day, starting from like Rudolph Valentino as the sheikh and on and on and on and on. And his study is very elaborate within Hollywood. And obviously, when you talk to most people that are not on Fox News, they will tell you the depiction of Muslims is negative. But you guys have gone deep into the data and you were looking at, can you explain a little bit like how you were able to decipher what was negative, what was positive? I know some of it had to do with the words that were used, etc. Either one of you can take that one.
Yeah, so, right. So everyone, you sort of ask random people, what do you think coverage is like? They would probably say it's negative, right? I don't think it's an enormous surprise that coverage is sort of negative. And what we are really interested in figuring out is, well, okay, sure, negative, but how negative, right? And negative compared to what? Because there are some people who just think all newspaper news is negative or all foreign news is negative. And as Eric pointed out, much news about Muslims is foreign news. And so what we did is we basically collected sort of an average representative set of newspaper articles from a range of American newspapers and said, let's just call those on average neutral, right? Let's just not, so that we have a benchmark to compare against. And then we can see, like, compared to that sort of a random or representative newspaper article in a U.S. newspaper, just how negative are articles about news about Muslims on average. And the way we measure the negativity is by looking at the prevalence of positive and negative words. A number of people have studied these questions, positivity and negativity of the news, and they've come up with a number of different dictionaries that list positive and negative words, and we basically tally those. The more negative the words there are, the more negative the article, the more positive words there are, the more positive the article, and then you can balance those against each other. And because we have this benchmark of representative newspaper articles, we're able to say, compared to that benchmark, just how negative are articles about Muslims. And that's where they really stand out. So you can compare it to the benchmark and it's more negative. The average article mentioning Muslims is more negative than something like 85 or 87% of our estimate of American newspaper articles.
So I read really somewhere, quite negative. Yeah, I read somewhere in the book that you guys, when the word Muslim is brought up to someone in the West, the association of words that come up, what are some of those negative words that came up?
Yeah, so it's not just the overall negativity in terms of all of the words. I mean, that's important. So if you think about the fact that the average Muslim article is more negative than 85% of the articles you're reading every day, that's striking, right? I mean, that's really negative. You have to read more than 4 out of 5 articles in a newspaper to get one that's as negative as the average Muslim article. But it's not just the kind of raw score, it's also the words that are associated with Muslims. And I think that's what you're getting at. So the most common words are radical, extremist, fundamentalist, militant. Those are generally the 4 most common words that are really tightly tied to Muslims and Islam, which means if you're reading the sentences that include the word Muslims or Islam, you're more likely to hit those words in that sentence than anywhere else in that article.
Which then it's actually interesting because I don't know if you guys looked at the real life consequences, but this reminds me of, for example, there was a time, and I don't even know what happened, but they were trying to put a mosque in New York City near the World Trade Center. And people were up in arms going, how could you do that? How could you put a mosque near the World Trade Center? They took it down. And I'm going, no, they didn't take it down. There was terrorists who were criminals who took down the World Trade Center. This is just a community that wants to have this space and use it as a mosque. And so, as you said, in real life, you start hearing people say, well, this is a radical Sharia. They're going to bring in, they're going to try and bring Sharia law. How often do we hear that? Like, what were you guys able to find the real life consequences of things that happen to Muslims based on these depictions?
I think it's a little hard to answer that because there are so many consequences that are, I would say, indirect, by which I mean you absorb all of these negative words, you absorb all this negative content, and then people go out and do things like that. But it's really hard to actually prove that, you know, this article on this day caused this person on the next day to oppose the Park 51 project. On the other hand, I mean, I think we have some examples in the book that suggest why this might be the case. So in one example we give, we talk about a sentence about Algeria. And the sentence says something like, you know, Islamic militants have killed, you know, over 20,000 Algerians. And on the one hand, that's true, probably. On the other hand, because 99% of the Algerian population is Muslim, it would be very accurate, probably more accurate, to say militants killed 20,000 Muslims, Muslim Algerians. So there's just a way in which the words are constructed in these articles that leads you to think about the Muslims as the violent ones, as opposed to Muslims as the victims, or Muslims as, I mean, what's missing are stories about kind of Muslims baking cookies, right? To use your example from your routine, there aren't that many of those stories of people leading very average, normal lives. Or Tehran, to get back to your example of your father not praying five times a day, but just, you know, raising you. Those are stories that are not told in great amounts.
By the way, I was flattered that you guys used my quote in the book. That's fantastic. Where, for those people that don't know, I had a joke where I used to say that anytime they show people from the Middle East or Muslims, they always show us burning the American flag going, "Death to America!" And I go, just once, I would like the news to show us baking a cookie. You know, just once, I want them to go, "Now let's go to Mohammed in Iran." He goes, "Hi, I'm Mohammed, and I'm just baking a cookie." Back to you, Bob. And that would be the whole news piece. And then I said also that then they would come back and be like, "Cookie bomb just exploded." But it talks exactly to that. Go ahead, Tehran. You were saying something. I cut you off.
I was actually going to bring up, because Maz, you brought up the Crusades, and is that maybe what it is? This conflict over the conquest of not only power, but also over the autonomy of God. This is the West versus the East, and it's the most central formation of this conflict. It's like, these are the enemy, let's badmouth the enemy, and it just becomes part of that cultural heritage that's transferred from generation to generation to generation, where it becomes the normal perspective and narrative because of that conflict. Was there ever a time where Muslims were actually perceived as good in the Western world?
Ooh. That goes back centuries.
Yeah, it's a little bit out of your scope of 20 years, but I feel like
there was that one time when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Exactly.
Yeah. Go ahead, Professor Van Der Veen.
Yeah, it was one of the really interesting things we found. So this was part of one of our thoughts, our hypotheses, was that it's the sort of Islam is the other, right? Like the threatening cultural other. And one of the really interesting things we found is that articles that are about sort of Islam as Islam, right? Religious practices, let's say Ramadan or particular religious dress and so on, those are not the most negative articles. On average, American newspapers are actually pretty, I mean, they're still negative, they're not neutral, but they're less negative than most of the articles. So on average, American newspapers aren't that much into sort of it's Islam versus the West. So that was in some ways, in whatever limited ways, sort of a positive finding that sort of Islam per se isn't necessarily the thing that's being depicted negatively.
Sure, but there's always a view against the other, right? So it's not like there's not anti-Semitism in the media as well. It's just there's a lot less Jewish people on the planet. If you're looking at a billion Muslims, it's easier to make them, making Muslims the enemy when there's a billion of you and a billion of them. It's the Lakers versus the Celtics. It becomes, you know, the Redskins versus the Cowboys. Nobody's going like, nobody's going against crappy teams, you know? No one's like, oh man, can't wait to beat those
Jaguars.
Exactly, the Jaguars or whoever is just not great. Like no one's feeling that vibe. There's no rivalry. So maybe is it a rivalry thing?
You know, it's a great question. And there's a political scientist named Samuel Huntington who wrote a kind of semi-famous thesis on the clash of civilizations.
And that's the famous thesis.
It's pretty famous, but it's also really disputed, right? Because it sort of oversimplifies the actual internal coherence of the Muslim world, right? To get back to the discussion we were having a little bit earlier. But I think there's some element of insight there in that if you're not an expert in, you know, a particular country, if you're not an expert in politics or society or religion, it's very easy when you step into a discussion to start with a pretty simplistic view of what's going on. And I think that's where a lot of the people you came across in North Carolina or wherever, Maz, where you were, you know, sort of doing your routine, they don't have the depth of knowledge of the scholar or of the journalist. So I think what Mauritz was saying earlier is a lot of journalists aren't making these oversimplifications. They're actually writing really good, detailed, informative stories about a particular country. Even in the wake of 9/11, there were a lot of stories about, there were Muslims in the towers just as much as there were in the airplanes. Many Muslims rejected, you know, outright and forcefully what happened on that day. Those stories did run by the journalists themselves. But I think if you are an average reader and you don't study these things, you don't go into depth, then when you're sort of bombarded with these constant exposure to words like extremist, terrorist, radical, militant, fundamentalist, even if the story says not all Muslims are terrorists, right? That seems like a very progressive statement. And from a journalist perspective, they think they're doing some good and maybe they are. But still, you're putting Muslim and terrorist in the same sentence. So it sort of triggers this very simplistic reaction, Tehran, that you were talking about, where people are sort of like, Muslim equals terrorist, even if somebody's telling me they're not. It's kind of implanted in my brain that those two things belong in the same sentence.
Because also you're saying when they write not all Muslims are terrorists, people are reading, well, then that means a lot of them are, but not all.
Right.
So 9 out of 10 maybe are, you know, but here's, now you guys, your study that you did ended in 2016, which in a way is unfortunate because as we know, under the Trump administration, there was even more, you know, Islamophobia and all of that. But at the same time, I know in Hollywood, we're in a world where they're trying to push diversity. They're trying to push stories from other voices. So we end up with a TV show like Rami Youssef, which is a Muslim guy in his 20s or whatever, 30s, living in New York and just trying to get laid, basically. So have you seen, did you see in those years leading up to 2016, did you see better representation and depiction of Muslims? Was it getting better or was it getting worse? And how did the Trump era, since the book ended, I'm sure you kept an eye on it still, how did the Trump era affect the direction it was going in before Trump got in?
Yeah, Maritz, do you want to jump on that one?
Well, you know more about the Trump era, but the way, so did it get better? I think in the period after 9/11, there have been moments, and I don't know if there were more of those moments later than earlier, but there have definitely been moments where journalists themselves have kind of stopped and said, hey, like, we're noticing that even in the stuff we're writing, there are far too many sort of sentences where Muslim and terrorist appear in the same sentence. And we need to be more aware of this. It doesn't directly show up in sort of our overall negativity measure, but we do see that after 9/11, there was an enormous jump. as Eric already suggested, in the frequency with which terrorists and extremists appeared right next to Muslim. And that does start tapering off a little bit towards 2016. And part of that, I think, is journalists themselves realizing, like, we need to be careful about, more thoughtful about how we write about Muslims. Really don't need to bring in terrorism if it has nothing to do with the story.
Yeah, like if they do a story at, like, you know, whatever, there's a mechanic from Syria who opened up his shop and he's not a terrorist. So now the word terrorist is there and you're like, oh no, you did it again. But then you get Trump, Professor Bleich, and he shows up and he starts with, because I know we all saw it with our own eyes. One of the biggest things that they would talk about, the wall. It wasn't just about keeping, as he said, Mexican rapists and drug dealers from coming, but they would also throw in this idea of, oh, there's terrorists coming in. We all saw that they said, oh, there was a prayer rug that was found near the border, which means there was definitely a terrorist trying to come in. So talk to us about that Trump era and what the effect was.
Yeah, I mean, one of his first moves was to institute, you know, what he himself called the Muslim ban. So the idea was, let's just keep all Muslims out. He absolutely amplified the idea and played on it and made political hay from the idea that Muslims are dangerous and that they should be kept out of this country. That was his whole shtick. And it was, of course, covered in the media. And so the media data that we have from 2017 through 2020 show that the negativity held pretty much as strong. It didn't get better. And I think a large part of that was because Trump and his allies were putting it out there in ways that the media would cover, and therefore using his words and explaining what he said. At the same time, I do think that the the idea that you had or that you expressed about how Hollywood is trying to bring in other voices and be a little more skeptical of the traditional way of approaching things. We also, I think, see that in the media more anecdotally in the last few years, where the media would report on what Trump was saying, but did not play the card of, we need to be absolutely neutral and simply say, here's what Trump says, here's what the Democrats say. You know, they would be more open about saying, here's what Trump says, this is inaccurate. This is, you know, I don't think they would put it in quite these terms, but this is kind of nuts. And so don't take this too seriously. So there was definitely a noticeable shift, I think, anecdotally, in the ability of the media to say, we're not simply going to report what Trump says as if it's neutral, and then what somebody else says on the other side. They were more condemning of what he had to say.
Yeah, it's almost disheartening sometimes. I feel like we take two steps forward, one step back, especially when, I don't know about you guys, but once in a while, I will try to watch Fox just to see what they're saying. I don't last more than a minute because I'm going, this is just, they're just making shit up. I mean, it's just crazy. But you see the effects of it. Like, again, this is anecdotal, but I remember early on when Trump had won, there was a clip going around on Twitter where there was this family that clearly they were Muslim. They were at a beach. And I think they were Muslim because you can see the women were not fully covered, but they were somewhat covered. And they looked like they were, I don't know what Middle Eastern country they were from, but you see this drunk guy, very like East Coasty, approaching them and saying, you need to get out of here, get out of this country. This is Trump's America. And he's yelling at them. And I'm going, if this guy had not been fed this red meat, he wouldn't have gone and found these people and just started yelling at them. You know, he wouldn't even know who they are, or what they are, but they get fed that negative stereotype, and then they find these people on the beach and they go yell at them. So, you know, I do think that obviously the media that you're saying was starting to be a little more cautious. Would you say in your study that the other side on the right was getting even more belligerent, or were they all making progress?
I mean, the newspapers that we looked at were mostly mainstream newspapers. So on the right, we looked at, the Las Vegas Review Journal and the Richmond Times Dispatch. I mean, the New York Post was probably the most like Fox News like newspaper. It is more negative than the other newspapers for sure. But the more mainstream right newspapers are not more negative. In fact, they tend to be about average, mostly, I think, because they cover things like, I mean, I remember a Richmond Times Dispatch story that's, a woman, they're interviewing a woman in her workplace who talks about the sort of devotion of her Muslim colleague and how she respects that because she's a devout Christian, he's a devout Muslim, you know, they have something in common there. So that's maybe a more, a bit of an explanation about why some of the mainstream right-leaning newspapers are not quite as negative. The New York Post, I think, is a little bit more like Fox News. There's some red meat in there for their audience, for sure. And I mean, one other thing to just remember is if somebody reports about this guy on the beach going up and berating those women, that family, on the one hand, there are going to be some readers who read that story and think, that's horrible. That guy's awful. This poor family, right? They need to be supported. They're the victims here. On the other hand, there are going to be some readers who, having been fed that Fox News red meat, are going to be like, that guy spoke for me. Like, I'm glad he finally voiced my opinion and told those people to go home. So the very same story is going to have a different effect depending on what you've read and internalized before.
Well, that's what the whole Trump effect. Go ahead, Tehran. What were you saying?
Oh, no. Please finish your Trump effect.
No, I was going to say that was the whole Trump. That was the whole Trump thing where Trump would say something racist. And like you just said, there was people going like, I've been thinking that my whole life. Finally, someone's saying what I really believe. And we saw the filth that exists underneath a lot of the people that we thought our neighbors were, you know, educated and open-minded. And turns out, no, they're racist and sexist and et cetera, et cetera. Go ahead, Tehran.
So my question is this. How... or why does a Scandinavian and some random white guy, professors or not, get into this? You understand what I'm saying? Like it's not like I'm talking to Abdul and Muhammad. I'm talking to Meritus and Eric, right? Why do you two care?
First of all, Tehran, I don't believe Holland qualifies as Scandinavian. Am I right or am I making this up?
No, you're correct. This is part of the, you know, like the whole Scandinavian world is kind of like the whole Muslim world. Right.
Yeah.
I used to get the sort of, you're from the Netherlands. Oh, you must know my friend X. Right.
But are you Scandinavian? Are you Scandinavian? No. So what would it be?
The Northwest Europe.
Yeah. It also is called the Schengen. What's it called? What's it called?
We're in the Schengen is almost all of the European Union. Okay. The Benelux is Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg.
Oh, wow. Sounds Scandinavian to me. Let's
right.
You don't get negative press, bro. You don't get to have bad feelings about this. No one's going out there like, not all Scandinavians are terrorists. You know what I'm saying? You're not getting the bad press.
There is Austin Powers, though, who took on the Dutch.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. Made us like you more. Made us like you more.
Your Faja. See, what did, you're right, Tehran. That's a good question. What did lead you guys that aren't from the Muslim world to study this?
Well, I have a long-standing background interest in kind of race politics. So when I was doing my dissertation back in the 90s, I was in Britain and was living in a neighborhood that was on the border of Brixton, which is a well-known Caribbean neighborhood of London. And there were known to be every once in a while riots there. And one night a riot broke out in my neighborhood and basically came outside my bedroom window. And I watched four, Afro-British young men square off against four guys in riot gear, four policemen in riot gear. And I just wound up going out on the streets because my neighbor leaned out the window and said, I have a camera, I'm recording this. And that's what stopped the riot police from beating the crap out of those kids. Wow. So I went out on the streets and basically thought, you know, if she can stop some bad stuff from happening by bearing witness, maybe I can do that too. I wound up getting arrested and wrongfully arrested and spent the night in jail. And
so you found out what it was like to be black. You found out what it was like to be black. Well,
no, he found out what it was like to be Novak Djokovic in Australia. That guy. Keep going.
I got to tell you that when I was in jail, literally I was behind a screen and the policemen in the jail were like, "Oh, those goddamn Americans. Can you believe that?" Like, it really felt like I was targeted because I was an American. So I obviously have no sense of what it's like to be African-American in this country, but it gave me a tiny little insight into what it's like to be picked up, put in jail, held overnight, have your passport confiscated for 4 months, be accused of something that could land you in jail, all just because you had the wrong accent. When they arrested me, they said, "What's an American like you doing living in this neighborhood?"
Wow.
And that was enough. I was nicked, as they say in Britain. So for me, this interest in sort of, you know, marginalized communities, people who are on the outs for no good reason, has been, you know, with me for 25 years now.
And what about you, Professor van der Veen?
Yeah, so for me, I've been interested, Eric and I were in graduate school together, so we've talked about these things for a long time. But I've always been interested in how the way people talk and think about other groups, whatever the other groups might be, foreigners, domestic minorities, religious minorities, how the way they think and talk about them kind of affects their political actions, their support for one policy over another, and so on. And the thing that really, that I find really interesting, and this goes back to an earlier point you made, Maz, which is, it's not necessarily the red meat that is sort of really obvious, like the Fox News, "We hate all Muslims," whatever, but it's the much more subtle, like the what we found in our study, sort of the systematic negativity that's not on Fox, that's on sort of an average newspaper, but that people get fed, you know, sort of day after day, year after year, what the impact of that is. And before you can even start talking about the impact, you have to sort of measure how much of there is there, how much of this is there. And that's kind of what we were trying to do. And the fact that basically, like, it's not really surprising if you see the newspaper diet that an average American newspaper reader would get. It's not so surprising that, like you were saying, we thought our neighbors were, you know, nice and well educated and whatever, and it turns out they harbor some of these crazy ideas. That's less surprising than you might think, because there is this sort of constant diet of negativity about Muslims, not just in a very open way that you might get on right-wing television, but just in the media.
So now, in the world we're in right now, again, there's some good things that might be happening. Some journalists are saying, wait a minute, I got to check myself. I shouldn't put the word terrorist in there, even though I'm saying he's not a terrorist. Why do I even need to say that? Let me just talk about his auto mechanic shop or his bakery or whatever it is, right? So the journalists are doing that. We have shows like Rami. They're making a little bit of progress. Again, once in a while, you have another basketball player who, you know, changes, you know, converts to Islam, and you go, oh, that's another basketball player people are going to love. So all that's happening. Day to day, what can readers do to train their own minds to not fall into this trap that is out there?
Yeah, that's the, you know, that's the big point of our book, is to say at the end, now that you know just how bad it is, now that you know just how negative these stories are about Muslims and Islam, be aware, you know, have your antenna up and make sure that when you read a story and you come across the word Muslim or Islam, you're immediately thinking, hey, is this another one of those stories that has more negative words in it, more negativity in it than it should, right? Is there a way they could have written this story without associating Muslims and negativity? And I think if you have in mind just how negative these stories are, it's helpful when you're reading the average story to just, you know, be aware, I have to do some offsetting of this negativity myself.
All right, just be aware. You hear that, people? Be aware. Don't read lazily. Don't just read a tweet and move on. Do a little bit of research.
That's all it took, Maz. If that is all it took, it's just tell, hey guys, be aware, the world wouldn't be the place it is today.
Right, exactly.
Well, you know, sometimes there's also the things like, gosh, again, talk about two steps forward, one step back. There was a girl a little while ago, I think she was on a subway in New York, and she was Muslim, and she said that she was attacked for being Muslim, and then it turned out that it was kind of a Jesse Smollett type of a situation or some sort of setup. Mm-hmm. When I hear that, I go, you're not doing anybody a service by doing that, because I went down a few years back. There was a TV show that I was supposed to do for National Geographic where we were talking about guns and how the NRA steps up when it's the gun rights of white people, but when it's people of color, the NRA kind of quiets down. 100%. And so I went to Florida and I went to a mosque, and this one like Lebanese American sheriff came, and he was Muslim, and I was talking to them in the community and going, what kind of stuff happens to your mosque, and what about you guys and you know, the Second Amendment and your rights to guns? And I had not heard of this as much, but the women in particular were telling me, and some of them were, you know, Arab women, but some of them were American, like white American women that would wear the hijab. And they said when they would wear the hijab in public in Florida, they said many of them had either, one lady said she would pull up at a red light with her kids in the car, and a car would pull up and see her in her hijab and just start cussing her out and telling her to go back to her country. Another lady said that she was walking wearing the hijab and some guy was trying to light her hijab on fire.
What?
So yeah, these are the real life consequences, right? So we start seeing that, like you guys are saying, it's hard to tie the real life consequences. And again, I couldn't necessarily prove in the court of law that that person's read that article and then went and did that. But I think we all agree that these are the things that we, excuse me, we start to see happen. Another one that I point out in my special, my Netflix special, I point out that there was a guy, I think it was in Kansas, who shot two Indian guys in a bar, and I think he killed one of them, and then he drove off to another bar and told the bartender, I just killed a couple of Iranians. And this was around the time when Trump was running and talking negatively about Muslims, etc.
I mean, it happened in Orange County. The guy got stabbed just being at the bar with his girlfriend for being Iranian.
Yeah.
Got murdered.
Yeah. So,
well, one thing that's not in the book that we did with an economics colleague of mine is we actually did a survey where we online, you know, people are around to do these surveys, and we got, you know, 1,000 people, and we gave them different stories to read. And some of them we gave positive stories about Muslims, and some we gave kind of average neutral stories about Muslims, and some we gave negative stories about Muslims. And we had them then rate Muslims on what's called a feeling thermometer. So if you really like a group, they get 100. If you really hate a group, they get a 0. If you're kind of so-so neutral about that group, they get a 50. And what we found is if the people who read the more negative stories had more negative feeling thermometer scores about Muslims. People who read more positive stories, generally more positive feelings. So reading a 500 word story and then being asked how you feel about Muslims, if you give people a more positive story, they feel more positively. If you give people a more negative story, they feel more negatively. So in that sense, there is a direct, we can show there's a direct relationship between reading a more negative story, wow, and feeling more negative about that group.
There you have it. Stop watching, yeah, Fox News, people.
Right. Guys. But the point is, it's not only Fox News, right? Like, yeah, it's basically across the media.
Yeah.
And you read, and it's a cumulative thing too. In our experiment, we only exposed them to, you know, just the article. But, you know, day after day after day, you read these things, that adds up.
Right? Well, you're absolutely
very
right.
Hard, I mean, to dislodge too.
Yeah. I actually did something similar to you guys when I was in college. I did a couple of papers. One was back then, this was 89, 90, 91. So it was how different newspapers talked about the Soviet Union and looking at the words they used. And you're absolutely right. The words that are used in an article, as you read it, you go, you end the article getting this feeling underneath, going like, ah, oh, these Muslims, you know, even though it might be a good piece about the guy is, you know, an Olympic athlete, but when they say whatever, his father was a freedom fighter, and you know, one time there was an explosion, and you're going, ah, oh, even the Olympic athlete is, you know, fighting, you know, always fighting these Muslims, you know, but you're absolutely right. And that's in the New York Times, it's Washington Post, whatever it is. So I guess don't read anything, people. Don't read anything.
Well, that's probably a good tip, because there was a study done in New Zealand. I mean, you know, New Zealand, but very different, but still 16,000 people were asked, how much do you consume the news? Not did you read stories about Muslims, but just do you read the news a lot? And the people who answered, yes, I read the news a lot, were more negative about Muslims than people who don't read the news very much. So I think don't read anything is probably a good recipe if you're trying not to develop a kind of subconscious anti-Muslim instinct.
I'll make sure my kids don't listen to this episode, because I want them to read. You guys, let's go to this section now where we call Back to School with Professor Bleich and Professor Vandermeer. These are quick questions for quick answers, okay? So I'll ask the question, and then Professor Bleich, you answer first, and then Professor Vandermeer. So first of all, were you popular in high school?
Medium.
From not to medium. I rose over the course of high school.
Okay. What did you want to be when you were in high school, Professor Bleich?
Pilot.
I wanted to be an oceanographer.
Oceanographer.
Okay, well, that's why you went from nothing to medium. You know? Pilot. Pilot's a medium start, you know? Pilot's a good jump off.
What would you tell your high school self if you could tell yourself one thing, Professor Bleich?
Be patient. Mm. Wait it out.
Pay more attention to the news.
Oh, okay. Okay. A little twist on the whole conclusion we had a minute ago. What other profession would you do if you could, Professor Bleich?
Pilot. No, I'm
just kidding. Pilot. Vandermeer?
Bike shop owner.
Makes a lot of money. They love the bikes, Tehran. You ever been to Holland, Tehran? You ever been to Amsterdam?
Yeah, of course. They just have bikes everywhere. The bike lanes run the world. They run the world, the bikes.
It's amazing. I don't know how you cross streets over there. There's bikes, cars, trains, all kinds of stuff.
I keep having to hold on to my kids because they're not used to looking everywhere.
Yeah.
They would have been run over by now.
Last question. Do you guys recommend people get into your profession and why? Professor Bleich?
I love my profession. I find it incredibly rewarding, but there aren't many jobs out there. So I'd say be careful if you want to go this route.
Professor Vandermeer,
I completely agree.
So there are no jobs in caring. There's just no jobs in caring. Yeah. Information, education, you know, that's the world we live in. That's the world we live in. Yeah. But if both of you were doing crypto, you'd be like, there's so many jobs. You see?
Right.
Well, you know, people don't know this. Academia, you know, these guys, like you said, there's very limited positions, right? Because these guys, the other guys, they get tenure and they stay and they don't leave. And so to make
that's,
it in that, academia.
That's me right now. I'm enjoying that right now.
Okay.
But, well, there you go. You're in that position, yes.
Well, listen, before we leave, Tehran, what did you learn on this episode?
I actually learned two things this episode, Maz. First, I learned that I need to get a PR lady, because apparently PR is very important. If you have good PR, people will look at you good. Number two, I learned that not all Scandinavians are Scandinavian. So that's a good thing to learn. Not all Scandinavians are Scandinavian.
Well done, Tehran. And I learned that the New York Times is trying to teach us that Muslims are bad. I'm not going to fall for it. I'm going to cancel my subscription as soon as we're done.
And stop reading. Just stop reading. Like reading. You know, they said reading is fundamental. They lied. You know what I'm saying? Reading is effed up. Should have been the slogan.
reading is Islamic fundamentalism. You see how that came together?
Read our book, but don't read the newspaper.
That's actually very funny. That's funny. Definitely. Reading is fundamental, but when Muslims read, it's fundamentalism.
Fundamentalism. I want people to check out your book, Covering Muslims, American Newspapers in Comparative Perspective. I'm going to read this blurb that you guys put in there, which is, again, it's very important. It presents the first systemic large-scale analysis of American newspaper coverage of Muslims, demonstrating conclusively how negative American, British, Canadian, and Australian newspapers have been in their treatment of Muslims across the two decades between 96 and 2016, and even before. But it's a great book, and I really enjoyed it, and I want people to pick it up. Where do people find you guys? Are you guys on Twitter or social media?
Yeah,
we're both on Twitter. Yep.
And what is that? What is your handle there?
I'm at Eric Bleich 1.
Okay, B L E I C H. And you are?
At A Mauritz V D V.
A Mauritz
U R I T S V D V.
That doesn't sound Scandinavian to you, Maz. That doesn't sound Scandinavian. Okay, I'm just saying.
Tehran, when you got Van der Veen or Van der something, that's the whole soccer team is Van der this, Van der that. I Van der Vi sometimes, but they always do a good job when they play. And you guys did a great job on the show. We really appreciate you being on here. And I hope we make a little bit of a difference here. I hope some people start being a little more scrutinized a little more when they read. So thank you guys for writing the book.
And thanks.
Fingers crossed to a better future. Thank you for being Professor Bleich, Professor Van der Veen. Thank you for being on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Back to School with Maz Jobrani. We hope you're enjoying it. We hope you're having fun. And we hope you're learning something. So make sure to let your friends know. Share it on iTunes. Share the clips from YouTube. Just get it out there. However you're listening, let your friends know to tune in to Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school.